Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Horse Sense, a show for you, the thinking horse person. At Horse Sense, we give you practical, relevant, up-to-date, and even inspirational information to enrich your horsing life. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. And if you've been here before, welcome back. It's really great to have you. This show is brought to you by the Equine Care Clinic, a clinic dedicated to the care of sick or injured horses when their owners aren't able to. And we'd love it if you checked out the site at equinecareclinic.com. I'm your host, Amanda Edwards, and this week I'm talking to return guest Steve Brinkworth about floating or trailering for those guys who are overseas. I'm not even sure if that's what you call it there. But anyway, there's some great info ahead, and I really hope you enjoy. All right, so today I'm talking to Steve Brinkworth from Horsemanship Essentials, and we talked to Steve back in episode 2. He's now our resident trainer for Q&A topics on all things horse handling. So welcome, Steve. How are you today?
Hi, Amanda. I'm good. Thanks for having me back on your show.
That's my pleasure. Yesterday you came out and took my little horse Forest for his starting training. And as you know, Forest had a little accident in the float a couple of weeks back when his mate went a little crazy and knocked him over. So I was pretty nervous about that yesterday. And I remembered how floating is a massive issue for so many people. And as I was standing there with my heart in my mouth, I was thinking, I really should podcast this.
It's a very stressful thing for a lot of people.
Yeah,
floating and floating and transporting horses.
It is. It's quite stressful. And I remember when I had, I think the first horse that we ever came across was my black horse, Asher. So he used to run out backwards and knock the door down and knock you flat to the ground if you were standing behind. So it was pretty dangerous, and you fixed him for me. But prior to that, I'd been walking around with a bottle of rescue remedy every time I had to float anywhere. So, and while I was watching you there, you did such a nice job, like with Forrest yesterday. It was so gentle and very sweet, and he just ended up pretty much self-loading and getting on there and going off with you pretty happily. So I thought we'd best be talking about that today. So what, you get lots of this, don't you?
Yeah, it's a big problem for people.
So what are the common problems people bring to you?
Well, often I have to go to them. Because they can't bring them to me.
Oh, yeah,
because that's the problem.
Good point. Yeah.
So obviously the big one is the horse doesn't go on there at all. But then there's other ones that are like he rushes off, which you were talking about with Asher. They'll be really sweaty when they do come off. Scrambling is obviously a problem for people. They're certainly the main ones. The horse getting pushy and not wanting to go on the float. And if you think about it from the horse's point of view, like it's a place, an enclosed space where they're trapped and can't move away from perceived danger. So it's only logical that they wouldn't want to go in that space. And I think it's actually a miracle that they float as well as they do. You know, there's a lot of horses float every day.
Yeah.
And they float fine.
Pretty happily for the most part.
Yeah, I think regularity is something that helps people.
Yeah.
If the horse is particularly tense about it, like it doesn't matter how regularly you do it, they'll not like it because of their posture. So the posture of head up and balance on their fore, and then they're like all tight in there, so they just want to escape. And oftentimes that is when you open up the back and they fly out, they'll load, okay, and they walk on the float, but then they fly out, and they don't have that logic that says if I go in that space, then I'm trapped. So they're obedient to loading, but then they're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, and when this tight space that I hate. And so as soon as the door opens, they're like, bang, gone.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, my horse, the minute you touched the back breeching door, or he would just be shooting
banging, off backwards. Banging, yeah. Banging to get out.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there'd been a lot of people slamming him in there real fast, and so yeah.
Shut the gate!
Yeah, shut the gate so the horse don't bolt. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you see people doing, like techniques that people have used either now or in the past that haven't really worked, and why don't they work?
Well, I mean, I think everyone's seen at a show, or I used to endurance ride, and people would kind of join arms behind the horse, get a couple of big blokes and join arms and nearly lift it in the float. You know.
Or the old lunging line that they tied to the side and then scoop it up there.
Yeah. Tie it to one side and pull it.
Or even more complicated, up through the halter.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
And out through the front door and kind of leave them in. Like, all of those things are making a horse do something. And if you think about, like, for some people, the corner of an arena can be a place that a horse doesn't want to go. You can't get them to go into the corner.
Yeah.
They kind of cut the corner. And, you know, so out on the trail, there could be a scary rock that you go past every time you go out, and they won't go to that. And they're all the same thing. So for a horse, we've got to get them to perceive elsewhere as being less comfortable than the place that they don't want to be.
Yeah.
So the corner of the arena, one is the horse's balance. So if his ribs are out to the right, which they normally are, and his head is up balancing him, he can't actually put himself in the corner very well. So he comes away. But if you make it uncomfortable away from the corner and move to the corner and leave him alone, they soon start to look for the corner and want to go into it. And so the float is the same. We've got to get the horse to choose the float as the place of comfort. So you've... Depending on how much he hates the float, if he doesn't like it much, if you have a carrot and your horse will go on the float, but without a carrot he won't, he doesn't have a floating issue.
Mm.
He just knows
he just how likes to get his a carrot.
Yeah.
He's trained you to give him a carrot.
Exactly. But for a lot of horses, they're truly fearful of the float. And so you have to basically make everywhere else outside of the float more uncomfortable than how much they don't want to be in the float.
Okay.
So then they'll make the choice to look at the float. And that this is the critical part, is you've got to see them when they look at it. They may be 20 metres from the float and they look at it. And you've got to leave them alone at that point. If they're an extreme, I hate the float.
So you've got to really notice the small things.
The small things.
Before we unpack that a little bit more, because I think that's kind of the crux
of... Gone a bit further along.
No, that's okay, because we, you know, that's fine. We're just having a chat. So what about the float itself? We do a lot of things now with floats that... I look at the floats that we have now, and they've got pretty much the bedroom and the kitchen sink in them. And I mean that literally. And I wonder how much we're moving away from what the horse needs in a float. And I'm looking at, you know, my float's got this massive great window at the front, and I'm actually thinking I should just cover that over, because I think that a lot of horses with problems are seeing that as a nice little escape route. And none of the horses, the boxes in America have got floats, and the English boxes. So worldwide, we have quite a different structure. What's good in a float for a horse?
All right. Obviously, this is going to be... People are going to have lots of different opinions about angle loads and straight loads and windows and not windows and breaching doors. I think from the point of view of training a horse to want to be in the float, I want a blocked up front window, because I don't want them looking out and the oncoming traffic lights, and it's very confusing and destabilising from a balance point of view, I believe.
Yeah.
So I'm quite happy with a blocked up window, and I think horses are fine. I think they're more comfortable without being able to see out than with.
I think so. I'm starting to think that too.
I think the window is unnecessary. It's something that we as humans have put in place so that we can look
see
back.
Them. Yeah. Now and I've got a car that I can't see anyway, because the back of it's so damn high I can't see the horse.
Yeah, so And then we've got cameras and things on. You can feel the horse and what's happening in the float. But, I mean, it's up to everyone about cameras and stuff like that. But I think I actually have an older float, which is a triple straight load. Mm. And the reason I have that is I've made it into a double straight load, which means the bays are extra wide.
Yeah.
So the horse can really put himself a little bit sideways in there and he's got a bit more room. Breaching doors, like obviously quite high breaching doors, so they can't, some horses will hit a breaching door and sit.
Mm.
And you just don't want them to be able to go under it. I like to be able to feed my horse at the front, but obviously things like choke are an issue, so they've got to be able to put their head down and blow out and clear themselves.
And if you, for those of you that are listening, we had Barbara Padolino on in episode 3 or 4 talking about travel sickness and ways to prevent that.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right, dropping the head down, keeping the head down low. So if you're going to put feed at the front, put it down low so they can stretch their neck down. Make sure their
lead can allow them to get down. You want the lead so that they don't turn and get their head around the bar, but that's where like a stallion divider and head divider, like a stallion divider is great. If you listeners are a bit not sure about a stallion divider, it comes back towards the back of the float, so it stops the horse walking on and putting his head in the wrong bay, basically, in a straight load. And then there's a head divider, which I think is a great idea because it stops. There's always one dominant horse.
Yeah, and the dominant horse, and she bites everything.
Yeah, and she'll eat his hay. Yeah. And so it allows the other horse that safety to, you know, not have the other horse annoying him. So they're the things that I'll be looking in a float. I'm not a big fan of angle loads because, one, if you do have a horse with issues, it's quite, I find it quite difficult to retrain them with an angle load.
Yeah.
Now, there's going to be people out there that will say, oh, no, I love an angle load. I can understand the angle, why people like it. The horse is more comfortable on an angle. But in actual fact, if you allow a horse to have room in a box, he'll face backwards and look the way he's just been. Well,
that's what Barbara's view was, actually, that they will float better backwards because they can lean. When the brakes are applied, they can lean.
Yeah.
And they're happier that way.
Yeah. And so they tend to, they'll place themselves that way in a truck.
Yeah.
Like if you've got a cattle truck or something, they're loose in pens, that's the way they tend to go. So we had a gooseneck where they were side onto the road, but they can, bigger horses don't fit because you've only
got
8 feet. So, and angle loads are difficult because your horse does come into an angle where his head is, and so if you do put feed there, it's actually a bit harder for him to put his head down.
Yeah.
And I find it difficult. You can get into a bit of a trouble trying to close the gates and move the horse, and so.
Yeah, I think sometimes people choose that because they've got a scrambling horse, and changing it up makes a difference.
And you can fit three horses.
Which is always nice if you've got, like, mum, dad and a kid.
From a training point of view, I find it really, the self-loading is easiest for me with a straight load.
Because
it's very easy to teach them to want to be in the float and they just load themselves. Yeah. So a lot of people lead horses in and that's a bit of a problem because, you know, it's very easy to get stuck in there or the horse jams you in there, and you know there's been deaths and serious injuries from that. So I believe the best way is self load because the horse chooses to go in and he's in there on his own. You're not there with him, so if you lead him in, then shut him in, then you leave, he goes, whoa, here I am all on my own in this space that I don't want to be here. So
I think I'll exit now.
Yeah. Yep, that little window up front.
Oh, yeah, it's looking real good. Yeah. Okay, so that's, I think, really good bits of advice. And I've seen, lots of people. I mean, how many horses, we've talked about this before, but, and this is a hard bit, this is a hard topic to actually get there's not a lot of evidence on it. So that's why I interviewed Barbara, because she's doing one of the very few studies on horse travel.
Yep.
And following on from her previous work. So, but you have worked with over a thousand, like hundreds, up to a thousand, a lot of horses in your life. So I guess
we had, sorry to interrupt, but we had 30 horses that we took to the Flinders. That's a place in South Australia for those who don't know. And we did that over like 15 years. So God only knows how many horses that was transporting. And since then, there's another 16 years. I don't know. So a lot.
So a fair bit. And you've, you know, retrained lots of horses that had significant issues.
Yes.
And made lots of owners' lives a lot happier, mine included.
Try.
So what's your approach now? Let's start with the young horse that hasn't got an issue.
Yep. So always, whenever we do anything with horses, it's teach first. So I always, first off is, it always comes to the same thing. You've got to teach them, change their instinctual flight and fight to, so they'll flee as soon as you look at them or ask them a question and they flee. So first off, focus. They've got to focus on you. Then I'll teach them to shift their ribs, which is generally from the right, they're locked to the right, to the left, so I can engage their hind feet, and that will help them to then release their neck from their shoulder. And so then their head is now released, their ribs are shifted, and their hind quarter is engaged. And now I can move them left and right, stop them. So now I teach them to back up, because a lot of people have probably experienced where you get the horse on the float,
but then
you can't get him off.
Yeah.
So we forget to kind of teach them how to actually back off. And they need to be able to back up with their head level and lift their back and take step by step, because a lot of horses push themselves back from their shoulders. So as they do that, their hind goes to the right generally, because their ribs are to the right, and their head goes up in the air. So as they go out, their head goes up and it touches the roof.
Okay, so Steve, tell us about your approach to, like, the crazy horse that doesn't want to get on and is absolutely, you know, really quite afraid of the float.
Okay, so with the horse that's really fearful, you have to the goal is to get him to spend enough time with the float to relax him.
Yep.
So you, first off, to get him to even look at the float, you've got to make it uncomfortable away from the float.
Yep.
And so when we say that, we don't mean beating him or bashing him or any of those things, but working left to the right and making him turn a lot. They don't like turning, they prefer to run. So if you can stand in one spot and move them to the right and then send them back to the left and move them to the right, and you can make them back a few steps and go sideways and just make it uncomfortable until they look at the float, and you'll see them choose to do that themselves. How much they hate the float is how much you have to make them dislike being out of the float to get them to look at the float. And their goal is to be able to get them to the point where they relax in a place on the float closer to our goal, which is having them in the float. But say it might be to touch the tailgate. Put the foot on the tailgate. And then as soon as they might touch it for the first time, you walk away. Take them away from the float. Don't try and make them stay there. You got to just, you even a split second, they touch it and you go, that was better than last time, walk away. And then next time you work them and they put a whole foot on the tailgate and leave it there for one, two, and you walk away. And they will soon work out that the comfort is that place.
Yeah.
But you've got to get them to give you more each time. Otherwise, they'll just give you the same amount.
So your timing and your noticing. So you've got to be really mindful in this, don't you?
Yeah. Very conscious of what you're doing and about, what the horse is doing.
Yeah. So
and read your horse.
When I first started learning these techniques, I used to get my son to stand beside me and tell me when he noticed the horse. Because sometimes I'd be like working, and then I'd forget that I wouldn't notice that the horse had actually, he was like literally almost trying to get on the float, and I'd be still working, because I was in the working zone.
Yeah.
So sometimes it helps to have an observer to just tell you, stop.
Yes, the horse is looking at the float, or he's done more. Yeah, that's probably a good point, because you've got a horse that's going all over the place, and you've got your tools, and you're trying to organise and learn yourself, and so it can be hard to observe what the horse is doing. I think of it like the game of Barley's.
Yes.
That we played as kids. You know, there's a point there where you're being chased and there's a safe zone where you get touched and you can't be caught.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, so the horse starts to get that when I'm touching the ramp, I'm Barley's, you can't touch me. And I want you to, the loader, the trainer, to think of it like, oh, drats, the horse has got in the float. Damn.
Can't touch him now.
Can't touch him. So instead of us thinking, get in the float, get in the float, get in the float, we're thinking, no, no, let's work out here, outside the float. Here, this is fun. You going left and right and going back and forth. Oh, damn, you're looking at the float. Oh, now I've got to leave you alone.
Yeah, okay.
And so the horse...
That's kind of good. That makes it a game too.
Yeah, and he's...
Because it can be quite stressful.
It can be quite stressful. We've got to remember that the horse is programmed to do the opposite of what a predator wants.
Yeah.
So you go into the yard to catch the horse and he leaves. You go in the yard to pick up manure and he's knocking your wheelbarrow over and in the way.
So when you say predator...
The human.
Yeah.
Okay. Is unfortunately so, we're a predator. We think in straight lines. We go towards what we want.
Yeah.
Whereas if you think about a horse, say, approaching a dam, they'll do it in an arc.
Yeah.
They kind of come in an arc and then run away. And then they kind of come in an arc and cross the threshold and then run away.
Yeah.
Whereas we just go, pew, straight to it.
Yeah.
So they're trained to detect what... well, they're trained to do the opposite of basically anything that tries to make them do anything. That's so.
It sounds like my children, Steve.
So, if you think of like lions, they hunt in a group or a pride, and they will try to siphon animals to a particular area, and then trap them and get the one they want.
Yeah.
So. Prey animals, horses, gazelles, whatever, go like rabbits. They run like crazy, but they go all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
Horses go together in a big mob
and
try to protect themselves that way. But they detect a predator and do the opposite. So if you're like, don't get in the float, the horse is like, I'll go in here. Oh, look at that.
That looks like a safe place. I'm Barley.
They leave me alone. So you've got to work hard to make it uncomfortable outside of the float. And when I say that, I don't mean you running around. I mean the horse has to move and turn and move and turn. And that will motivate him to find a solution. And the solution is look at the float. But we've already set him up because we've taught him to focus. We've rewired his flight and fight to focus and try.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pre-work. So you still go back to that, I'm going to retrain you to lead, to focus, to...
Yep. So to... when he looks away, like in the yard, when you first have your horse, if he looks away, you put pressure. It might be clapping until he looks at you and then you walk away. That in itself teaches him that when he's looking away, when he's focused away from the human or the person, it's uncomfortable. When he looks at the trainer, it's comfortable. The trainer doesn't have to touch him or do anything. He can just walk away. So that in itself starts to teach the horse to focus. If you have horses with water issues or they don't want to go on tarps or they don't want to go into the corner of the arena, it's all the same principle. You've got to teach them to look for the solution, and the solution is to go to the corner or put your foot in the water, and then you, the trainer, have to take them away as they cross the threshold. The threshold is where they further than they wanted to go, but not too far that they explode and leave.
Yeah, okay. All right. So if you've got a horse that is okay about, well, maybe is a little tricky to get on, but gets on. And then he gets in there and he carries on or he scrambles. So what's scrambling all about?
Scrambling, there's a lot of conjecture and chat about scrambling. And I can't say it is this or that. But to me,
I don't think you're the lone ranger there.
No, it's stress related. And I also believe it's a balance problem as well. So I think windows and things like that don't assist with that. But generally, if you get a horse to self-load and want to be in there...
So why do windows not assist?
Because they're looking out at moving environment out right, the window.
So you could, they could almost be getting vertigo, you think?
Yeah, exactly.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. So you, that's true. Because how can they interpret that?
Yeah.
I'm in a stationary thing that's around me, and I look through that window and everything's moving.
Yeah.
All right. If you put yourself in a float and go for a drive,
noisy is it?
It's noisy, it's unstable, and we have a comprehension of what's happening.
Mm.
But a horse has no comprehension of what this thing and what we're doing is. So... I don't think that helps, because to me, how can they understand lights coming towards them, trees whizzing past? It's just, it's got to be weird.
Mm. Well, considering my horse jumps at shadows someday.
So we've got to, I think having the environment inside the float where they're enclosed will help. I'll have a very light light inside at night, so that there's a very it doesn't have to be bright, so it's not pitch
kind
black.
Of dim light, but that's not
because
terrifying.
If you start to stand in something that's black but moving,
that's a little disorientating.
Very disorientating. The other thing is your flooring. Like I'll rubber matting. Get slippery if they wee, so I'll put down wood shavings, which will help. So they,
opposed to sawdust, which can get quite slippery in itself. So the wood shavings,
wood shavings seem to be better, and they'll soak it up, and they seem to work a bit better and stop the horse getting his feet slipping. So as soon as your horse slips, he's going to start to panic.
Yes,
that's innate with them. I mean, if we're walking along and we trip, or
our
adrenaline goes, and we, and ice skating. If anyone's ever ice skated, and one of your ice skates goes off, you're like, and you get quite stressed. So, and like with your ramp, as soon as they get dew on them, ramps are so slippery. So we've got to put. I always put slats about a foot apart from the bottom of my float, so that the foot will only slip a little bit, and then it's got something to grip. So even if it's wet, it won't matter. Mm. They can handle that slippage of a few inches, but any more than that, and they'll start to panic.
Yeah.
So I've got to set the things up for success. You know, doors that swing shut.
I'll just stop you there, because I think that's a really pertinent point. Set yourself up for success.
Yeah.
So at the start, so keep going on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So doors that will swing shut in the wind. You know, I'll put an elastic strap on or something to keep, if you're going to have them open, keep them open. Mm. You know, breaching doors and things like that. You've got to, if they won't stay open, you've got to make them open. You can't be trying to hold a breaching door open and get your horse to do this and not have things swing shut on them and jam them. And you just got to set yourself up. So with your scrambling horse, the next thing is once he self-loads, it's, I think, travelling with the centre divider across is probably your best solution. I think scrambling can...
What about taking it out altogether? So a lot of people don't travel with the centre divider in at all.
Yep. I do know of people that will have two horses in with no centre divider. The only problem with that is if you'd get one horse that leans, he'll lean on the other horse, and that can cause a problem. If your horses stand upright and they're fine, great, but it's just that... Mm. I don't think you have to take the centre divider out.
Yeah.
If they can just swing themselves a little bit and move their feet, I find that they're okay once they self-load. But it's getting the balance from the back feet.
Yeah.
This is, I don't think people grasp. We all talk about hind end engagement and the horse moving from his hind end, but I don't think people understand how much they move from their lower neck muscle and their shoulders, and their back feet don't actually hold them up.
No.
They don't. If you observe their foot, like everyone knows that...
And this is not just about a dressage move here.
This is not a dressage.
It's just to help them actually be able to...
Balance
properly.
Yeah. If you watch a horse as he walks towards a fence or something, he doesn't slow down with his head loose. He actually, his head comes up and he starts to bunch and he kind of falls sideways to stop because his back feet don't slow him down. He doesn't think about his back feet. The neural pathways aren't hooked up to his back feet. So we want the horse, when he moves, from a point of view of riding, but also doing any of the things we want him to think about his back feet and to create all forward, backwards, sideways movement from his back feet. So the muscles need to tense for the back feet to move, and then that forces the front feet to move.
And in the floating context, like yesterday, you spent quite a bit of time, and we're going to actually put a link to the video for this, but you spent quite a bit of time just saying, because literally that horse was stretched out, so he had his front and his shoulders and his head in, and his back were as far back as he could get them.
Quite common.
Pretty common, really stretched out. We've all seen that.
The and front you just feet spent, walk along.
Yeah, and you spent quite a bit of time just saying, just lift up your right hind
and didn't step work. It
forward, and he was stuck.
Yeah, I tried that for a little while, yeah. And it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I actually had to go, I forget exactly what
you
I
You actually
did.
Took him back off, I think. And then did a little bit more on getting him to bring his hind underneath him and step one step and then two step. And literally you were doing it step by step by step. Bring this foot and that other hind
get
foot.
Those. And so from
so
that
he stayed
point of
connected
view,
to his
yeah,
body.
Yeah, stayed together. I had a stick which I could reach the back feet with so to get him to actually bring those feet. The other thing that we haven't talked about is with the breaching door. So when your horse backs up, sometimes when they're new, they'll hit the breaching door
and they
don't know how to come forward when they're in reverse. So that's really important.
That's actually what you did. You took him off and you said, I bet I'm just going to teach him to come off the, and you put the rope around his behind.
Yep.
And you taught him to just, as you put a bit of pressure on it and as he moved forward. You released.
Yeah, so just simulating
just
real
gentle
what
advice
would happen.
And very easy.
And you only need to do it a couple of times. Mm. Once he's got it, it's enough that if he does back up and hit that breaching door, he'll go forward,
not sit
down. Because that's what sometimes happens.
Yeah, and then they get stuck under the breaching door and that's a real problem. Okay, so some of the things, you've talked about a lot of stuff here, so what are the things that people can do to improve their floating experience? And their horse's floating experience.
Yep. Well, I think the first major thing with horses is we need to get them to want to be on the float.
Yep.
We've got to get them to choose to be on there. And that way they will float safely and calmly. Then there's the movement, there's the rewiring flight and fight, getting focus and try. Those things are super important but hard to cover in this small space of time.
Yep.
So definitely getting the horse to want to be on that float himself rather than making him go on. As soon as we make them go on, they don't want to be on there.
Yeah.
They're like, absolutely. You want me to do that?
You want what?
Why do you want me to do that? It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever we want them to do, they're like, no, I won't do that.
Probably so learning learning reverse psychology.
Yeah. Make it uncomfortable out of the float. When they look at the float, leave them alone, and before you know it, they'll be putting themselves on.
Fantastic. And it doesn't take, as you say, it does not take very long. That whole little exercise yesterday, I think, probably took 20, 25 minutes, and that was a horse that had not a very nice experience. His last floating experience was pretty ordinary and pretty stressful, and he did that. Didn't take him long at all.
I think it's really important to talk about peer group pressure.
Yes. So, one of the things, and we'll all just set the scenario because I've had this scenario plenty of times, particularly when I had that black gelding. I'd go to a show and we'd get there and I'd unload and I'd be like drinking Rescue Remedy like it was going out of style. We'd go
They come in a pretty small bottle
they
too.
Do,
they do,
and I reckon I had a stock. In fact, I was probably drinking more brandy than anything else. Glad no one breathalyzed me. But we'd get there, do our competition. That was all great. And then we'd go to the end of the day and he'd be like, nah. And I'd have to go through my process. And 1,000 people would come and offer me advice. So talk about peer pressure.
Yeah.
I felt it. It makes you feel uncomfortable and sometimes it makes you feel like you want to try and take shortcuts that you know probably won't work with your horse.
Yeah, for sure.
So strategies for that would be so helpful.
Yeah, today I did a float loading of a very big horse, and he's taken a little bit of time.
So he's a 17-2 hand warm blood.
He is, and he's hit his head and never really been in a float.
Yeah,
he's okay. Just had one bad experience and been forced on, and now he's... And I had him within, you know, a foot of being right in there.
Yeah.
And that, I was just about to, no, you can just make him do that last foot.
Yeah, yeah.
When, and because it had been, I'd been with the client and it had taken time and, you know, I was feeling pressure. The pressure to get the job done and not cost too much money and all those things that go through your head. But that last little bit would have undone it all. By me making him come that last foot. So he'd gone a little bit further. He crossed the threshold. He was very close. Very close. But take him out.
Yeah.
Good boy. Well done.
Yeah.
Then go again. He crossed the threshold. He came in all the way by himself.
Yeah.
Job done. So you've got to be in control of your own adrenaline, your own emotions.
Yeah.
And you've got to... If you have to, remove yourself from everyone.
Till everyone goes home.
Yeah, if that's what you got to do, do it. Don't just give yourself the time.
Or ask them nicely to just give you some space that you've got it licked and you're training. Yes.
Thank you.
That's what I used to say. I'm just training. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for offers of help, but I'd prefer to just quietly go about this myself. I'll get there. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to jump in. Yeah, I'll get my dad. He's 6 foot eight. We'll just lift him.
We'll chuck him on. Yeah, yeah. He'll be no worries.
Get a rope, mate.
And, get a rope, mate. Yeah, I love that one.
You may get the horse in that time.
Yeah.
But you still got floating issues. So next time he'll be tighter or worse or more rushy or more pushy. And
I think if you're going to invest in retraining your horse, you have to stick with it. Like,
yep.
Although you, with that black horse, he was really, really bad. And we did get him on and but I had to continue the work that we'd done. And it took a few more months to really solidify it. And I did do things like I fed him in the float and so forth. And, but he's probably one of the worst horses I've ever had in terms of that situation. I've never had one since and I'm never having another one again because it's not fun. But, it did teach me a lot about patience, which I don't have a lot of.
Yeah, and the patience wears thin when you're not sure that what you're doing is going to work.
Yes,
and exactly. That's when you start to get emotional. And this will work. It works 100% of the time, all the time. And you don't have to work your horse outside of the float once he understands they'll self-load.
Mm.
But as soon as they go, oh, no, I don't want to go in there. You then go, oh, well, let's run around out here.
Let's do some work out here.
And he's like, oh, that's right. I love being in there.
Yeah.
So, and the chewing is important. Like getting the horse a little bit of feed is not to get him in the float. It's to get him chewing. So.
And what's good about chewing?
Chewing keeps the tongue relaxed and the tongue's connected at the back of the skull to the neck muscles, which is connected to the back muscles and the ribs. So tension comes from the ribs through the shoulders into the neck, and the horse feels brace. And so he grinds his teeth or locks his jaw, stops his breathing because all his muscles through his neck and his shoulders are tight. Mm-hmm. So he breathes in a short, shallow way, which increases his
stress,
which is like humans who hyperventilate.
Mm.
They just start to take short, shallow breaths.
Which is what happens to me when floating doesn't go well.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the paper bag. You know, people breathing into a paper bag.
Yeah,
It's very similar with humans. Yeah. We stress ourselves out with short breaths and we get less oxygen and more...
Mm.
You're a nurse, you know what all that is.
But more anyway, carbon dioxide.
That's the one.
We're retaining carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Which is not good. Makes us a little lightheaded.
Yeah. So the horse is the same exercise. So by keeping them chewing, it keeps their jaw soft, which helps to relax them.
Mm.
So.
Perfect. All right, well, there's floating in a nutshell. Now, it's a complex topic, so we are going to upload a video, and that'll be on the show notes, and you can also, we'll stick that on Horsemanship Essentials, which is your website.
Yes, that will be...
Or stevebrinkworth.com.
Yeah, I think it will be on stevebrinkworth.com.
Yeah, okay. But we'll have links to all of that on the show notes as soon as possible. Might take us a few days.
Yeah.
We've got to cut some video, but that'll be really great. So I just want to say the other thing is a big congratulations to you for being selected for the Brumby Challenge.
Oh, thank you. I must thank my wife, Sally, for that. She is actually the one that put the application in.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So that'll be, there's how many trainers were selected?
I think there's 24 in total.
Yeah, okay.
Some doing yearlings and 12 doing ridden horses.
Right, so, and you've got a ridden horse?
Yes, and you have 150 days and then we display them, I guess, at Equitana.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to use your Brumby for my wound care talk.
Without a wound.
Without a wound. He will not be having wounds.
He'll be wound free. But he'll be
he or she will
be happy to do the demo.
Great. So just a big congratulations on that, because I know it's quite a tough process and there's lots of stringent rules around it. So that's really excellent and we can't wait to see those videos. Where can people find out more about you?
Stevebrinkworth.com.
Yes.
We do have a home study program available, which just has videos of me explaining what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And from the beginning, from yard, riding, float loading, tie up, everything. So if people are interested in that, that's available on the website. It's a pretty awesome product.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks again, Steve, and we'll look forward to you. Now, listeners, what I would really love people to do is write in on our Facebook page or email me on equinecareclinic.com, or it's actually info@equinecareclinic.com, and just any questions or anything, because what we're going to do is have a regular vet session and a regular training session and do bits of Q&A. So send in your questions and we'll put them all together and give you hopefully some good hints and tips going forward. So thanks again, Steve. It's been great fun again.
Thank you, Amanda.
All right, cheers. Well, how about that? It's a hot topic for sure, and I know that many of you will have faced some of these problems. My three top takeaways from today are, drum roll, number one, set yourself up for success. Make sure the environment's right. For example, the breaching doors are tied open, the dog's tied up, if you've got the door is not swinging in the breeze, and all those other distractions. And if you watch our video, you'll notice that we didn't remove the other horses, and maybe that would have been a good idea too. Number two, make it uncomfortable outside the float. Inside the float is Bali. I'm not even sure where that term comes from, but in Australia, that's a game we used to say, and Bali was like the safe place. So I think it's good to kind of gamify it. It takes some of the emotion out of it. Number three, hold your technique and don't submit to peer pressure. So if you're out and you've retrained your horse and you've got a technique, stick with it, politely refuse other people's help, and just persevere. You know what to do now. You can find more information at stevebrinkworth.com, and there's some links to Steve's site at horsesenseshow.com website in the show notes. You can talk to us on Facebook, and also have a look at their work. On the show notes, we're going to put a download to the video that kind of encapsulates all of this. So have a look at that. That's really great. There's a whole lot of views around this topic and I'd love to hear what you think. So leave a comment, a review on iTunes, on the show notes at horsesenseshow.com. Don't forget to support the sponsorship of this show by checking out the Equine Care Clinic website at equinecareclinic.com For information about the latest first response workshops, access to the products that we use at the clinic, and a whole lot more credible information to keep your horse happy and healthy. Like the Equine Care Clinic on Facebook for more great Hills tips too. And I'd really like to say thanks also to Angus Strachan for production. Until next time, may your horsing be great horsing, and goodbye.